It is firmly declared that the steady adherence of transcendentalists to their respective spiritual positions constitutes real piety, and that sin occurs when a transcendentalist neglects his prescribed duty. One who adopts this standard of piety in sin, sincerely desiring to give up all past association with sense gratification, is able to subdue materialistic activities, which are by nature impure. Purport. Lord Krishna here explains more clearly that those persons directly engaged in self-realization, either through Jnana Yoga or Bhakti Yoga, need not give up their regular duties and perform special penances to atone for an accidental fall down. The actual purpose of Vedic literature is to direct one back home, back to Godhead, and not to encourage material sense gratification. Although the Vedas recommend innumerable rituals for promotion to heavenly planets and enjoyment of all varieties of material opulence, such materialistic rewards are meant only to engage materialistic people who otherwise would become demoniac. To purify an accidental fall down, one who is engaged in transcendental realization need not adopt any procedure beyond his own spiritual practice. Could you ask my wife to bring in one of those anti-coal lozenges in my bag? The word sanganam, Jajini Chaya, indicate that one should not practice Krishna consciousness or self-realization superficially or casually. Rather, one should sincerely and earnestly desire freedom from one's past sinful life. Similarly, the words Yanishta indicate that one must constantly practice Krishna consciousness. Thus, essential piety is to give up material sense gratification and engage in the loving service of the Lord. One who engages his senses, mind and intelligence 24 hours a day in the Lord's service is the most pious person, and the Lord personally protects such a surrendered soul. I'll just read the translation once more time. It is firmly declared that the steady adherence of transcendentalists to their respective spiritual positions constitutes real piety, and that sin occurs when a transcendentalist neglects his prescribed duty. One who adopts this standard of piety in sin, sincerely desiring to give up all past association with sense gratification, is able to subdue materialistic activities which are by nature impure. There are one or two similar verses to this in the Srimad Bhagavatam in the 11th canto as well, and they describe the same theme. What is considered, where, what is the source of one's good qualities? The source of one's good qualities is performing activities for which one is eligible to perform, whereas if one performs activities which one is not prescribed for one's eligibility, one actually becomes, one incurs fault. So there are many different scriptural injunctions. Sometimes got something for me? Yeah, just for one? I need the whole packet. Can you bring the whole packet? Yeah, I'm a bit greedy this morning. Thanks. She's making sure I don't step out of line. So, if one actually performs activities, even though they're recommended in the Shastra, but they're not for one's own level, one's activities are faulty, and one develops bad qualities, one becomes contaminated, and it's actually very dangerous, and one can actually even... That's better, thanks. One can even incur sinful activities. So, you know, one may be following scripture and not understanding that even though one is following scripture, one is actually being sinful, because that particular activity is not recommended for that particular person. So we'll discuss these things in the course of the class, of course. There's a statement that Srila Prabhupada makes. Actually, there's two statements which appear to be contradictory, but they really have to be understood in light of this verse. I was listening to a morning walk one time. Srila Prabhupada was questioned by one of his disciples, and they asked him whether people who, you know, tribal people who are, you know, quite primitive, maybe live in the jungles and what have you, whether they actually incur sinful activities because they engage in, you know, a lot of non-Vedic activities. You know, they're killing animals in the forest to eat, and you know, many of their activities, that they may be taking different types of intoxication, you know, from the flowers, and, you know, mixed with the honey and what have you. And he said, no, it's not sinful. Now, another time, a disciple asked Srila Prabhupada that these same, you know, primitive tribes people, are they getting karma for their activities? And he said, yes. Right. So, it appears to be a contradiction, but we have to understand the full range of those answers. They're brief answers, but they're both correct. On the first hand, those tribal people, they're certainly under the laws of karma. So therefore, you know, they're getting karmic reaction for their activities. But they're not getting severely punished for their natural way of life, living in the jungle, even though that includes things which are forbidden in civilized societies. According to their level of consciousness, you know, quite often they may identify themselves with the animal kingdom, although feel that they're at the top of the animal kingdom, you know, very superior. They may not necessarily, in a civilized civilization, of course, they're thinking that they're different from the animals, because they appreciate that they're the difference between matter and spirit, and so that is civilization. So sometimes primitive civilizations who do not have a good conception of spirit and matter and may identify themselves with you know, the material body quite strongly, and they may be engaged in activities of killing and, you know, doing all sorts of things which are illicit by you know, Vedic standards. It's not actually sinful in the sense that the rules and regulations in their society are restricting them to some degree, so that they're not acting completely as they do in the animal kingdom. Even in that primitive society, there is still rules and regulations which don't exist in the animal kingdom. And following those rules and regulations, it is restricting their sense gratification to some degree, so that they're, according to their level of ability, they're actually making a sincere endeavour to advance on the path of restricted sense gratification. So although they're engaged in a lot of sense gratification, still, for their level, they're making a very sincere endeavour, to the best of their ability, to advance, to, you know, restrict that sense gratification for a higher purpose. So therefore, they are not severely punished by the laws of material nature, even though their life is filled with sense gratification. And in fact, at the end of their lives, if they follow the rules and regulations of their tribal society to the best of their ability, they will actually advance to a higher level of human existence because of their piety. We see also with children that, you know, up to the age of 5, it's considered that they're not really responsible, and that they don't really accrue karma. It's not that they're not under the laws of karma, but for instance, if a child accidentally eats meat, you know, they're under, or you know, even if a child is fed meat by their parents and they're very young, they're not going to get severely punished, you know, because they're not actually accruing that level of karma because of their lack of responsibility. Whereas, as soon as education begins, and you know, that knowledge is there, then of course even young children become more and more punishable, you know, by the you know, by the laws of karma, and especially adults, those with full knowledge. So what may appear to be very sinful, very impious, or very impure on one level is acceptable on another. So, you know, people on different levels can't actually imitate someone on a lower level, and people on a certain level actually can also not imitate someone on a higher level. That's also impious. So to give an example there, that someone, Srila Prabhupada, once when he was in Calcutta, he saw that there was a brahmana who was pulling a tela. Is that what they call them? It's like a, you know, usually the animals pull them along the street, right? And they had brought a horse or a cow or something, or a bullock or something, will pull them along. So a brahmana is not supposed to do the work of an animal. In fact, you know, the brahmana, being the top of human society, above everyone in society, they're supposed to understand that human life is not meant to work hard like an ass, but in actual fact is to reduce one's, you know, hard working, so that one can devote one's full time to the process of self-realization and God-realization. So Srila Prabhupada was watching this brahmana. He had this sacred thread, and as he was going past, someone who knew that brahmana, you know, called out to him that, you know, yes, Pandaji, Brahmana, I am offering you my respects. And the Brahman, you know, replies back, yes, and I am offering you my blessings. So, he's actually there. He's actually, you know, barely even qualified for a sudra, and yet taking the position of a brahmana. And in previous kingdoms, you could be severely punished for that, the total misrepresentation under, you know, Yudhisthira Maharaj or Maharaj Parikit, you know, Lord Ramchandra or Prithu, you know, these kings. It was totally forbidden. If someone wasn't following, you know, the path of the Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, and claiming to be one, very, very severe punishment. It was not allowed at all. It just didn't happen. If it did happen, it was immediately punished and just rooted out from the kingdom. Of course, what happens when someone who's not qualified to be a brahmana accepts the position of a brahmana is that they become the leader of society, and with the result that they mislead people. And they mislead people, and therefore here is the brahmana who is the head of society, and the example is you should all work like asses. Right? I am the head of the society, and I am working like an ass. Everyone can follow my example. So, you know, work like an ass, and because you are so busy working like an ass, there's no time to study Shastra or to, you know, do these other things. This is my example, this is my teaching. So, of course, the whole society goes to hell by following. So, it's very, very serious. So, it's actually impious, but, you know, he may be doing some things, like wearing the sacred thread, so one may say, oh, it is recommended in Shastra, the Brahmana is taking birth in a Brahmana family, he's wearing a sacred thread, he's very pious, he's following Shastra. But actually, his activities, because his activities show him to be a sudra or less, then any activities he performs as a brahmana are actually considered impious. So, the Bhagavad Gita also states in the 18th chapter, text number 47, that even if one's activities are considered to be full of faults, if that's your prescribed activity, you should perform that, and there's no sin involved in performing your own prescribed duty, even though it's faulty. But if you follow another's path and you perform that activity perfectly, you're actually at fault. And again, you know, we can see examples of that with, we see that, for instance, Bhima. So, of course, a kshatriya's business, you know, when there is some dispute, then it is their duty to kill. That's how a dispute is settled amongst the kshatriyas. They fight it out until the opposing, you know, opposition is dead. Dispute settled. There's no politics and legal court cases that drag on for years and years. The opposition is dead, that's it, the spirit solved. That's a fact. So, you know, when the killing is there, then it's considered that, you know, the pious deed has been done. Now, of course, they have different codes of activity. You know, they will not fight with an unarmed person. If someone is unarmed, they will give them the weapon of their choice and then they will fight. They will not fight with someone who is, you know, obviously inferior. They will not hit, you know, or attack people from behind or certain parts of their body, like below the waist. We see in the case of Bhima that after the, at the very end of the Battle of Kurukshetra, Bhima was fighting with Duryodhana, and Duryodhana, of course, he was a much more expert opponent with the fighting with the club, and Bhima, he was stronger. Bhima was as strong as 10,000 elephants. That's a lot of elephants. That's a lot of muscle. He was, you know, smashing Duryodhana. But of course, Duryodhana, his body was like iron, because you know, his mother gave him that benediction, you know, that Gandhari. Gandhari, of course, was she kept a blindfold throughout the course of her life because her husband was blindfold. Her husband was blind, Dhritarashtra. And by the, you know, huge potency she gained from her vows of chastity, you know, she became very, very powerful. If she was angry, she would look at someone and burn them to pieces. But she said to her son, you know, tomorrow morning you come to me and you come completely naked and I will gaze upon your form and turn your body to be like iron and no one can kill you. And of course, as the next morning when Duryodhana was coming and Krishna said, he said, Duryodhana, you know, where are you going? I'm going to see my... Oh, but you're completely naked. I said, oh, you know, you'd better at least cover up, you know, below the waist. So Duryodhana thought, yes, good advice. So, you know, he covered up. And when his mother saw him, of course, his whole body turned strong like iron. She said, Duryodhana, what have you done? I asked you to come completely naked. And he said, well, Krishna gave me this advice. So then, you know, she smiled and she understood, you know, I had my plan, but Krishna, you know, he has defeated it. So she understood, no one can go against the Supreme Lord. You know. So, of course, at the end of the Battle of Kurukshetra, then, you know, Balaram, who had been on holy pilgrimage, he came and he tried to advise both of them, you know, no one can win here, and, you know, just... don't fight, just give up your weapons, just leave it. But of course, both of them, you know, they being Kshatriyas, Bhima could not forget all the wrong, and he, you know, he wanted to kill Duryodhana, you know, and so he was silent until Balaram left, and Duryodhana wanted to kill Bhima, you know, I'm going to kill you, like that. So anyway, when Balaram left, then Krishna, he advised Bhima, you know, if you want to kill him, you have to hit him below the waist, like that. So even though it was against the Kshatriya codes, Bhima smashed him below the waist and he fell down broken. And later he died. So there, Bhima is performing his activities as a Kshatriya with some fault. And yet because it is done for the pleasure of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, without any desire for personal sense gratification, that fault is burnt up in that fire of devotional service. But as we see, another example is that Droni, who is the son of Ashvadana, the son of Dronacharya, he was actually a Brahmana. But he took up the profession of a Kshatriya, so he immediately became degraded. And to make things worse, he also committed those Kshatriya activities, because for a Brahmana, it's not that the activities of a Kshatriya degrade him, but for a Brahmana, to actually take up the activities of a kshatriya, he becomes degraded. He killed the five sleeping sons of Draupadi. So as a kshatriya, of course, you know, they were without weapons, they were not prepared for fighting, they were sleeping, and he killed them. So he broke the kshatriya code. So again, there was fault. But as a brahmana, performing the activities of a kshatriya for his own personal sense gratification, that fault, he had to suffer the reaction for that. And that made his activities very, very dangerous. So the example there is given that, you know, just as fire is covered by smoke, all activities we perform are covered by some sort of fault. Whether you perform the activities of a brahmana, kshatriya, vaishya, sudra, but if you perform any of those activities on behalf of the Supreme Lord, that fault becomes burned up, and there's no sinful reaction. The reaction is burned up by offering it to the Lord, who is like the fire, burns everything up. So even though there's some, you know, fire is completely pure, that's why we use fire. Fire, of all the elements, fire is considered the most pure. That's why we use the fire for the yajñas. That even if something is a little contaminated and offered to the fire, the contamination is just burned up by the potency of the fire, and then the offering is accepted on behalf of Lord Vishnu, and everything becomes purified and accepted. So, similarly, when our activities, you know, just because there is some smoke with the fire, so the fire itself is completely pure, but there may be covered by some smoke which may be considered to be faulty, but we don't give up the fire, we still take use of it. In the same way, we don't give up our prescribed activities according to our particular level, even though there may be some fault, but we take use of, you know, performing those activities on behalf for the pleasure of the Supreme Lord, and then that fault is not considered very significant, and we get the benefit of the fire or coming into contact with the Supreme Lord. So now, of course, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has explained to us that in Kali Yuga it is not really possible to fully reinstate the you know, rules and regulations of the Varnashram system. To some degree, but not fully. And therefore, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu recommended that we, principally engage in the Sankirtan Yajna. And although, in Kali Yuga, everything is considered to be an ocean of fault. But if the chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra is there, then that is powerful enough to purify all the fault that may be there within one's activities towards the Supreme Lord. So therefore, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, of course, is recommending that Harinam, 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 Eva, Kevalam, Kalona, Steven, Steven, Gatira, and Yada. In this age of Kali, the only means of salvation is actually chanting the holy names of the Lord. There's no other way, not by karma. There's no other way, not by jnana. There's no other way, not by, you know, Astanga Yoga. Not by any of these processes, only by chanting the holy names of the Lord, only by bhakti. So, as those who take up the pure chanting, the holy names, then they become eligible to become bhaktas. And bhaktas of three different levels, Kanishta Adhikaris, Majjhima Adhikaris, and Uttama Adhikaris. But this same rule applies. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains that we have two types of duties. One is constitutional and one is conditional. So according to our conditional duties, this rule applies, that according to our according to one's level, eligibility, one's level, one should follow the rules and regulations according to one's level, and one should not be attached to the activities of those on the previous level, even though it may appear that there may be some fault in the activities in one's level, or one may think, there was more sense gratification on that previous level, maybe I liked it on that better, or one may think, these more advanced people seem to be doing much better than I am, so maybe I'll do their thing. So even as a devotee, the same principle applies, that one should perform activities according to one's own level, and that constitutes piety. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura also explains that when you can actually perform properly all the rules and regulations consistently on your level, then you're qualified to advance to the next level. Not before that. If one can't perform all the rules and regulations on one's own level, then one doesn't become qualified to advance to the next level. So the Kanishtha Adhikaris, what is the duty of the Kanishtha Adhikaris, the Madhyama Adhikaris, and the Uttama Adhikaris? So the Kanishtha Adhikaris, of course, what are the symptoms of the Kanishtha Adhikaris? Is that they appreciate the Lord to some degree, more in his majestic feature, the understanding of the sweet feature of the, Lord Sri Krishna is very difficult for them to comprehend. But they appreciate the Lord as the all-powerful, omniscient, all-knowing Lord to some degree. But they may have many material conceptions, even of that conception of the Lord. But what they cannot do is they cannot discriminate between devotees and non-devotees, and between the innocent and the envious. They can't do that. So therefore sometimes they will, associate with envious people, thinking they're wonderful devotees. Sometimes they will be envious of nice devotees. They cannot make those distinctions. Their duty, of course, as Kanishthas, is generally they're engaged in the worship of the deities, and they will follow the directions of the spiritual master. If they try and take shelter of a very advanced devotee and follow his directions. The Madhyama Adhikaris, their duty, of course, is to make that distinction, and they have that eligibility. They can distinguish who is envious of the Lord, who is innocent. People, if you give them the opportunity, they can, take to Krishna consciousness. Who is a nice devotee? And they can also appreciate to some degree that, the three different levels of devotees, Kanishtha, Madhyama, and Uttama. And they can also appreciate they love to serve the Lord. So and the Uttama Adhikaris, in one sense, we might say that they're also like the Kanishtha in that they don't distinguish between the envious, the non-envious, and the devotee. But their not distinguishing is not a matter of, inability. But their not distinguishing is because they see everything in terms of their Krishna Prema. By seeing in terms of their pure love for the Supreme Lord, they can only see everyone as the servant of Krishna. And they can only, you know, look at it. They don't see anyone as they see everyone nicely engaged somehow, directly or indirectly, in the service of Krishna, and that everyone is an eternal servant of Krishna. They don't have to make that distinction. But for the purposes of preaching, they usually do, in order to spread Krishna consciousness. The Madhyamadikari, it's actually their duty to, you know, cultivate that ability to distinguish between those four different types. And the Kanishtha Adhikari, they cannot. So those three levels of devotees, they should also follow the rules and regulations according to their level. The Kanishtha Adhikari, they cannot imitate the Madhyamadikari, and the Madhyamadikari generally are engaged in preaching activities and you know, mature Madhyamadikaris may take responsibility or even leadership positions in the preaching movement of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. If a Kanishtha Adhikari takes that role as a preacher, that can actually cause a, you know, a little bit of disturbance. Therefore, we don't, you know, when you know, until people have been trained, we don't generally get them to speak the Srimad Bhagavatam class or even the Bhagavad Gita class or give any classes generally until, you know, there's some sign that they've, you know, come up above the Kanishtha Adhikari platform, because they don't have the ability to understand the philosophy and to make the proper distinctions. We generally don't ask the Kanishtha Adhikaris to write books on transcendental subject matters or to write some new songs. Let's have a new song book. So and so is a good musician. It is a Kanishtha Adhikari. He's a good musician, good singer. Let, you know, we'll get him to write some new Vaishnava songs. We don't do that because it is they don't have the qualification, and it causes unlimited trouble. Just like the Brahmana who was pulling the, you know, tela. One devotee came to me one time. She was having difficulty relating to her spiritual master, actually, because her spiritual master engaged so many people in collecting funds instead of preaching. And I said to her, you know, it's probably a good policy, because if we just let everyone go out preaching, God only knows what they're saying and who to. If we can somehow keep them busy and engage in devotional service, that's a good thing. But not necessarily. We actually send everyone out just preaching. Yeah, go out. Certainly, everyone can preach to some level. Everyone can go out on Harinam Sankirtan. Everyone can try and sell Srila Prabhupada's books. Like that. To some degree. But there are certain restrictions. You know? There are certain restrictions. And we also, and the Madhyamadikari, of course, you know, they're expected to follow a, you know, a higher level of trying to give up sense gratification than perhaps what's seen with the Kanishtha Adhikaris. You know, sometimes you see that some devotees, they hover around the Kanishtha Adhikaris for 30 years. Thinking, oh, you know, this one's a really nice guy, he's at the temple and what have you, you know, and I'm just doing what he's doing, you know, what's wrong with that? But, you know, actually, in order to advance, especially if one's been, you know, a devotee for so many, many years and been had the opportunity to associate with advanced devotees and hear so many nice lectures, you know, it's not correct that they just maintain being part of the ecstasy crew, as they call them, you know, just sort of. So nor should devotees imitate the uttama adhikari, you know, someone above. We see the activities of, say, Haridas Thakur. Haridas Thakur, of course, was in the renounced order of life, but when in the dead of night, in a secluded place, he was approached by Maya personify, and even I think before that there was the prostitute, and you know, she tried to allure him for, you know, sexual encounters. And now Haridas Thakur, he actually broke the regulative principles, because he should not have stayed in that lonely place with that woman for 3 days. You know, according to the rules and regulations of sannyasi, 3 minutes is too long. Already everyone's questioning, oh, what's going on there? What's that sannyasi? He's on his way out. There's some problem there. He's alone, you know. Not that there's anything wrong with women. For men, the opposite sex, you know, is you know, a form of sense gratification. And Prabhupada says, for man, woman is woman, and for women, men are the women. That's how Prabhupada puts it. So when we say, you know, associating with women, that means that, you know, women of a very, you know, elevated spiritual position, to be alone in an inappropriate place with a man is the same category as a man being in an inappropriate place with a woman. You see, there's not just saying, you know. So for man, woman is woman, and for woman, the man is a woman. You know, they represent that sense gratification. And at certain levels of a devotee's life, there should, you know, there are different rules and regulations. So Haridas Thakur, being in the renounced order of life, he should not have stayed in that lonely place with that woman. But he did. But he did so because he wanted to deliver her. He felt sorry, you know, here's this prostitute, what a wretched, you know, condition of life. You know, how horrible. And here I am, you know, enjoying the holy names of the Lord and relishing, you know, Prema Bhakti. You know, let her just get a little taste of that. So, and he delivered her. So there was no fault, even though it appeared to be fault, by his pure devotion and complete lack of any desire for sense gratification. Any fault, even a huge fault, because for a sannyasi, that's a big fault, is completely burned up in the fire of that, you know, devotional service. There's no fault left. Every trace is burned up. There is no reaction. In fact, there can only be benefit, both for her and for Haridas Thakur. But if younger devotees imitate Haridas Thakur, Haridas Thakur is, you know, he's performing his activities, there's some fault, well, there's plenty of fault in my activities, but I'll burn them up because I'm such a powerful devotee. It's not going to happen. Actually, what does happen is that when a neophyte devotee imitates an advanced devotee, what happens is that they get to be in contact with those very rare and spiritually powerful objects, which usually are only handled by very mature and powerful devotees, you know, with, so just like the deity of the Lord. Generally, you know, we just allow some of the elder, mature, trained up devotees, to, you know, deal directly with the deities. It's not as if, you know, if everyone, say we all went on holidays for a month and we just asked the neighbours, oh, can you look after the temple for a month? We'll be back. Could you imagine what would be, you know, there'd be barbecue. You know what I mean? It's like, you wouldn't want to think of that too much. But if you, and, you know, so when a neophyte imitates an advanced devotee, they come into contact with those things that advanced devotees are dealing with very carefully. But they don't know what they're doing. They're also coming into contact with other actual advanced devotees. It's described in the seventh chapter of this Srimad Bhagavatam, the advanced devotees are like fire. You know, you approach fire very carefully. If you approach fire haphazardly, without knowledge of what you're doing, you immediately get burnt, you immediately have trouble. I see that sometimes, with the children, they, you know, because they help me with the juggies. And, you know, I'm sort of, doing things with the fire. Because I had a lot of practice on the farm as well. I used to light these massive fires that are probably the size of this whole hall here. You know, just burning off rubbish on the farm, just practically every week. Massive big fires just lighting up the sky. These little fires, you know. But, you know, sometimes the children think, oh, that looks easy. And, you know, within 2 seconds, oh, you know, they immediately burnt themselves. What to speak is if no one's watching, you know, they can set themselves on fire, they can kill themselves, they can burn the temple down. You know, it's like... So... When you approach a saintly devotee, it's like you're approaching fire. And when Kanishtha Adhikaris or even immature Madhyama Adhikaris come in contact with advanced devotees because they're taking the position of advanced devotees, then they're in contact with those devotees. They're in contact with that powerful fire. But they don't know how to handle it. You know, the philosophy... The philosophy, Srimad Bhagavatam, is non-different from Krishna. It's like a deity. We see the Sukadeva Goswami, you know, and the Acharyas, they consider the Srimad Bhagavatam to be the ripened fruit of the Vedic knowledge, and therefore they passed it down very carefully. That's how you handle a ripened fruit. Very carefully, you pass it one branch to the next like that, because it's a ripened fruit. You know, it's not like a cut off a piece of branch of the tree, you can just drop it down. But the ripened fruit, very careful. Srimad Bhagavatam, very, very careful like that. So the trouble is that when an immature devotee takes the position of an advanced devotee, they're actually in contact with so many transcendentally powerful, spiritually powerful, you know, items. And they can cause their own devotional life immense trouble, so much difficulty within a very short time. So, you know, for their own benefit, you know, they're generally, you know, gradually introduced, you know, how to, you know, respect the philosophy of Srimad Bhagavatam and to hear it. And so therefore, in the beginning, the most important, you know, process for young devotees is hearing. Chanting comes after that, way, way after that. A lot of hearing. You know, hearing for, you know, as often and as, you know, long as you can. And then do some more. Because, you know, the kirtan and, you know, and shravanam, that is even, you know, that is, you know, Shravanam is actually very elevated. For those who have perfected hearing, they can take up kirtanam, you know, chanting, preaching. And for those who have become very perfect in, you know, always glorifying the Supreme Lord, then they can develop the ability to remember the transcendental pastimes of the Supreme Lord. Always. and they can engage in all the other activities like that. So here, this verse is describing that one should, real piety is to follow the rules and regulations and the activities prescribed according to one's level. And when one steps out of, you know, those bounds, even one may appear to be doing something very wonderfully, it's a very dangerous position. And that applies both on the material platform, whether one is following just the Varnashram Dham, or whether one is acting, you know, in devotional service as a Kanishtha Adhikari, Majjhima Adhikari, or Uttama Adhikari. And therefore, it's actually better that devotees have a clear understanding of their level of devotional service. If they're not sure, they should, get association with devotees who can guide them as to the proper activities, you know, for their level, and get the proper training. If there's something that a devotee wants to do in devotional service, get the training first. Get some solid training. Just like myself and Aniruddha, we previously used to distribute full sets of books. So there was a program in Australia, and they chose one person from each temple that would, you know, become the distributor of full sets of books. So our quota was every week we had to sell one full set of books. So they didn't just, you know, pluck out of the temple that, you know, who is a really good salesperson, or who dresses really nicely, you know, good looking, and, you know, got that sort of, you know, charismatic person. They didn't choose like that. It was, you know, they're looking at, you know, who's done, you know, so many years of Sankirtan and trained up in the philosophy to some degree, and, you know, shown some sort of steadiness, and, you know, this, that and the other, and they're looking like that. And okay, so, and then after that, then we had to get further training for a long time. We used to fly to Sydney or drive, and we'd have regular, you know, courses, how to sell Srimad Bhagavatams and how not to sell them. And even some of the, you know, devotees who didn't actually follow the prescribed, activities in that training, they just thought, oh yeah, that's alright, you know, this is all great, I've been to the training, but I really didn't take it in. I know one devotee, he was the leader of the Srimad Bhagavatam salespersons. But just, you know, put his training, so-called training, he didn't really take it, you know. In fact, he didn't always go to the training. He sold so many sets of Srimad Bhagavatams than anyone else. No one could figure out how he did it. Now, after some time, I was in Adelaide, and then I went to New Zealand, and I took up the same service of selling Srimad Bhagavatams. And my service became going round to all the people who were constantly ringing up, saying, I've got this set of books here, no one in our house reads them, someone dropped it off, a deposit we didn't even want to pay, and you know, blah blah blah, you know. And so it took me about 2 years, and I had to go around and gather up nearly all of those sets of books. I eventually resold them, but at a good price, even. But I had, you know, because the training wasn't there, and that's what happens. Someone who has a materialistic motivation, all they wanted to do was see their name above someone else's on the score sheet to be read out in the Australasian zone. You see? So, how much trouble if even if the training's there, one still has to take it and practice it. But the training has to be there. But the point is, of course, now in our ISKCON society, and we see here in Melbourne, we have so many devotees, so many hundreds of devotees. And what we have to be careful of is that we don't have so many untrained devotees in so many very important positions. And, you know, to do that, there actually has to be systematic training. And Srila Prabhupada wanted Bhakti Shastri, Bhakti Vaibhava, we have the Bhakti Bhutsha programs, you know, so many programs like that, temple programs, Srimad Bhagavatam classes, and so many people training in different departments like this. Very, very important, because if that training is not there and devotees take up very important services, they can not only cause their own devotional life a lot of trouble, but they can cause a lot of trouble, you know, unintentionally, even for the society. And we saw that with Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur Society, that in the end, you know, he mentioned that he was a little disappointed because he felt that some of, even of his leading disciples, were not properly training themselves in the proper mentality and activities, and he could see that that would cause trouble. And when he left the planet, instead of following his instructions like well-trained, you know, soldiers working purely for the pleasure of the spiritual master, they just fought for position and, you know, so who will be guru, who will be leader, who will be head, like that. And, you know, that's what can happen. In previously, in Srila Prabhupada's time, temple presidents would give up the post of temple president, Jayananda, because he wanted to drive the Sankirtan devotees out on Sankirtan. He knew Prabhupada would be so pleased that, you know, preaching. And it, people that hang around the temple, you know, is looking for position, and it wasn't, Prabhupada wasn't really so much interested in that. He even actually, you know, in my Brahmachari days, you know, everyone went out preaching, and you know, there was training, there was, you know, in different departments, but if you sort of really couldn't take up that mood, you know, you may sort of do some temple activities. Not that they're inferior or any less. All services, if they're performed, you know, in devotional service to the Lord, are absolute. But at the same time, Srila Prabhupada definitely wanted that devotees don't just hang around the temple looking for an office to sit in. He wanted devotees to be trained up and go out and preach. There's no doubt about that. But we should certainly be careful not to think that devotees who are doing temple services are in any way inferior to devotees who are going out preaching. Devotees, you know, many devotees who have the same preaching fervour as the ones out on the, you know, in the field, they may be doing different duties in the temple, because they know that support activity and that management is just as important. Because, you know, if the Sankirtan devotees come back and there's no prasadam, you know, so the cooks, you know, but still the cooks can be in that preaching mood, that I'm feeding the Sankirtan devotees. If a cook is in this mood, oh, I'll just hang around the kitchen because I'll always get well fed, you know, that's the danger. If a cook is, you know, or managers are thinking, you know, we're managing and there's office work and papers are suffering, reception, we're doing that to push on the preaching, then they're getting the same benefit as the preachers who are out there, you know, in the field. There's no doubt about that. But what Srila Prabhupada didn't want, and what Srila Bhaktisiddhanta didn't want, the people just hang around the temple fighting over position and cozy offices and their own sense gratification in the name of devotional service. You know, that sort of thing. So, everyone should try and, you know, get trained up as a preacher, And a preacher in Krishna consciousness means, you know, there's unlimited variety of activities from many different temple services, even the person cleaning the courtyard, even the person cleaning the toilets is just as important as the person doing the deity worship. That's a fact. If people come to the temple and you know, the deity worship is going beautifully and they go to the toilets and they're all moochy, they think, oh, you know, this Hare Krishna temple, they're all... But if they see, you know, that the toilets are nice and clean all the time, and they also see that, you know, the deities are nice, then the pujari is making just a huge advancement. The person cleaning the toilets is making huge advancement. The person cooking is making huge advancement. Everyone on an absolute platform, there's no higher or lower, because everyone's joining in to make Krishna consciousness very attractive to anyone. So that is an absolute platform. But those who are on a different level, not on that exalted platform, are those who perform devotional service not so much with that preaching mood. Even if they're preachers, sometimes people go out, as we said, distributing full sets of books, and they're in worse consciousness than the person cleaning the toilet. Not that the person cleaning the toilet is in bad consciousness, but, you know, the person cleaning the toilet can actually be in better consciousness. The person cleaning the courtyard. The cook who's cutting up potatoes can be in much better, you know, Krishna consciousness with a great preaching fervour than the person out there distributing books thinking, I just want my name, you know, on top of the list. So there is an absolute platform, and at the same time there are different levels of devotees, Kanishta Adhikaris, who generally have material motivations, Madhyam Adhikaris, who become quite, you know, very seriously to purify themselves of that material contamination, and then your Uttam Adhikaris, who become, you know, spotless devotees. And one should get training according to the level one's on, and not be attached to the previous level, and not jump up to the next level. That's the point. Any quick questions or comments? Yep.
Just in terms of that example you gave earlier about the Brahmin pulling the card, I can see there's a fault in terms of like Vanashram and Dharma.
Yes.
But in terms of you know, being a Vaishnava, is there any fault with that occupation?
Well, not in terms of a Vaishnava. A Vaishnava can do anything, any service that's required. So we see that, you know, Narottam Das Thakur, he used to, when his spiritual master took rest, Narottam Das Thakur used to hide, and when he took rest, he'd come and he'd clean the stool, you know, and, you know, make everything nice and fresh and sanitized like that. And we see also that, you know, when Srila Prabhupada was in India, you know, someone had to take care of, you know, cleaning and, you know, removing stool and what have you. They remain elevated Vaishnavas, even though their activities, you know, externally appear to be that of a Sudra, even less. So we should never look at a Vaishnava as being Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, or Sudra in that sense. Vaishnavas are actually transcendental, and yet they may engage in any of those activities. But when a Vaishnava, you know, is, for instance, pulling a cart for the pleasure of the Lord, then we consider him to be a Vaishnava. And when someone is, you know, even a brahmana, is pulling a cart for their own sense gratification, then they're considered to be degraded, you know, from the position of a brahmana, taking birth as a brahmana. But the person whose natural position may be to do that activity of pulling the cart, we don't consider them degraded, because they're actually performing their natural activity according to their ability. by performing all their activities to the best of their ability, looking after their family, taking care of their responsibility, they're considered somewhat pious. So, the same activity performed by different persons for different motivations has different effects and different results. We can't just look at the activity and say, this person is, cleaning shoes. Anyone cleaning shoes is immediately, degraded. Because one person cleaning shoes is pious, one person cleaning shoes is degraded, and one person cleaning shoes is the most exalted Vaishnava. And we're all doing the same activity. Yeah.
How can one can know what is
prescribed duty? Yeah, as I said, by associating, by learning from devotees. Otherwise, it's very difficult. It's a very especially in Kali Yuga, these things become very difficult to understand. Kali Yuga makes everything very complicated. Simple things become extremely complicated. You really have to approach a devotee of the Lord whose intelligence is pure in order to understand these things. Yeah, just quickly. Good, yeah. Well, for instance, if you have done something and you have found that perhaps, at this stage in ISKCON there's not sufficient training in that particular thing, and you've learnt the hard way, you might help to train others up because you've been through it the hard way. But everyone should be, even mopping the floor. That's a fact. If you need to mop the floor, you're better off to ask a devotee how to do it. If you ask a brahmana how to mop the floor, they'll show you the easiest, most practical and effective way. And if you ask, like a brahmana devotee, if you ask any old person or just speculate, you can actually do the things the hard way and not get such a good result and take twice as long. Even to mop the floor, you should, approach someone, get training. What to speak of, anything else. But if the training's not there and you've somehow gone through it the hard way, then whatever experience you've gathered, then if you can offer some training to someone else, that's a great benefit for the movement. I have to go. Jayapataka Swami, yes. He was trained by Jaina. Yeah. Very nice. Yeah.
He was so sincere about the Prabhupada that he was making. So that's Yatra art. And Jayapataka Swami joined him, and that's how he joined the movement.
Jayapataka, that's right. He was attracted because Jayananda, although he was the temple president, he was also the rubbish man.
Yeah.
And people would come and talk to the rubbish man, and they would be thinking, this guy is so transcendental, I can't wait to see, the rest of this, But he was, and Jayapataka Swami was attracted by that particular mood. It actually helped him to become, I want to become like this. This is the rubbish man, he's in such transcendental consciousness. Why was he in such consciousness? Because Jayananda was a preacher. Although he was cleaning the rubbish, he was, in a complete preaching mood that this temple should be attractive. That anyone walks past, they'll see that this place is, I'll make this rubbish area just, beautiful. This can be the best part of the rubbish area, can be the best part of the temple, because I'm going to do it. That's preaching. And someone who's not in the preaching mood, they can walk past the rubbish bins, they can see things everywhere, and I'll just leave it for someone else. That means that the person doesn't have the preaching mood. Yeah. I gotta go. Hare Krishna. Thank you. Yep.